It is Thursday, the 1st of May, and this is episode 206 of Digital Outbox. Happy May Day. It is May Day, right?
I've no idea.
Or is that the bank holiday? I'm never quite sure.
You
only remember it at school. Did you ever do maypole dancing?
No.
I can't imagine you doing maypole dancing.
Because clearly I'm not a soft puff southerner that dances around maypoles and gets
we
bells.
We pranced
out.
And danced around the maypole. It was wonderful thing.
Is that with your sticks and your bells?
No. Come on. Get your cultural icon, you know, around.
No, I did hear it for the first time ever. My mom mentioned something this morning about wiping your face in dew and May.
Really?
And I was like, what are you on about? And you never heard that before? I've never heard it. Sat down at work and somebody says, so, have you been wiping your face? And, and I'm like, what is this?
I've never ever heard of that. It must be a Scottish thing. Never heard of that. But anyway, all the fun things you can do in May. Prance around poles and wipe your face in dew. Facebook have been talking to us. They've been doing their F8 conference, basically their developer conference, and they've decided they're going to turn it into a yearly event now. Even though the main crux of this year's conference was saying we're going to keep things stable for 2 years.
Yes.
So next year, everything again, said exactly the same. Yeah, so basically they've said 2 year stability of their core APIs. They are guaranteeing that they're going to remain stable, including all their login, the sharing requests, SDKs. I mean, that's been one of Facebook's, not downfalls recently, but it's certainly been a level of frustration for developers in that you're always chasing a moving target. You can never move on to the next project because you're always constantly updating your old projects to keep up. But they've released new APIs, new graph stuff, and they're basically saying, right, we've done this release. We will give you plenty of warning if we ever make breaking changes going forward, and we're going to keep this stuff core for 2 years and not move it. Which sounds a good idea.
Yeah, and because up until now, they've always, and I'm trying to remember their right kind of mantra, was always a kind of break fast, fail fast. They were quite proud of their hacker culture. You know, we will just turn this off, we'll just break this, and you'll have to update.
And people up till now have been doing, but because now it's at the core of so many non-fast moving things, they're getting pressure, I think. And I think the maturity now of their platform, I think they have to move in this direction. That's what I'd say anyway. You know, maybe they don't have to, but it feels like they should.
And I think the key thing is just what you said. They're a platform now. It's no longer a website. It's no longer an app. They are a platform with a massive amount of connectivity behind the scenes, and they need to act like a, you know, almost like an operating system in the cloud. You know, they have to be fairly stable now.
Yeah, they're a standard. They've released a new version of its login system. They're allowing people to be able to log in anonymously to an app and really have fine-grained controls about what that app can see about them. So they've kind of just gone to the next level on that. But yeah, the anonymous thing's an interesting one. So you can log into an app without actually giving that app your user data if you want to trial it or you want to do that. I'm guessing that Facebook may allow the developers to sort of limit your access a bit, sort of, you know, try before you buy almost.
Yeah, but at the same time, they also, I mean, the kind of demo, the part of the demo that I saw, they gave the example that if anonymously you then start to share some things, like, you know, you put photos up or you do some texting or whatever it is, whatever the kind of application is you're trying, once you swap over to say, actually, I don't want to be anonymous anymore, all that data is then retained. So it seems quite robust. And I think it's a good option to do. I kind of hate when you fire up an app and it says, oh, sign in with Facebook. It's like, no, especially when you think, fine, it's an easy way of signing in, but then it says we want to post on your wall. It's like, well, I don't want you to post on my wall. Thanks very much.
And over recently, they've been allowing, you know, much more fine-grained control, but it sounds like they've gone to the next level on this. But I guess the other thing is, once you've given an app the access to your user data, all, you know, you can have all of Facebook's, you know, documentation and agreements for developers. Effectively, you hand over your data and then there's no saying what happens to that data. So this allows that user that first step of knowing that they can go and use that application, see if they like it before actually giving that developer or the application their user data, which will be there forevermore, basically.
Yeah, and we've seen lots of apps obviously hacked and lots of data, you know, breaches over the years.
Plenty of apps that just their primary goal is just scraping.
Absolutely. So. And I mean, it's bizarre. Shaq had a perfect example. He was trying to buy a theme for a Tumblr website last night, and the site he was trying to buy from, he didn't want to set up a login, didn't want to do any of that, but he couldn't buy it without actually creating an account. Mm. And it gave him a Facebook option, and he thought, nice and quick, Facebook. And at the last part of it, it says, are we allowed, you know, you need to give us permission to post on your wall? And he's like, no. And that was after they put all the payment details in, etc. Yeah. And it then didn't buy it.
So he was right, like, so he just couldn't get weird. Through to the end without, it's like a, you know, shotgun to the head.
But he thought, that can't be true. Tried it 3 or 4 times, then got a call this morning saying there was like 5, you know, attempted payments on your card last night, all for, wow, you know, $10.99 or whatever. Are you sure that's correct? And it's like, what a scummy way of doing it, but that you have to give permission for somebody to push something, you know, a post onto that wall. Yep. So hopefully, you know, whether the anonymous side of things or even just that finer, you know, level of control, I still want to stop somebody being a scumbag, you know, from a development point of view.
Course not.
If you want to force somebody to do that, you can do it.
Well, and lazy developers can become scumbags just by the fact they've, you know, they're not doing things properly.
Don't call me a scumbag.
Applinks.org. They're also setting up initiative, this Applinks.org, to help deep linking on sort of mobile devices between applications. So they are going to be offering a way of putting a link up, which will then go to, you know, if you're on, say, your iPad, try and offer a way of, you know, a link to allow you to then link to the other application. I did a really bad job of explaining that. but effectively, yeah, a way of linking deeply inside of mobile devices.
Interesting. Didn't expect this at all. So in iOS, there's been lots of this kind of URL linking between applications to try and get around some of the limitations of, you know, it's a fairly closed platform.
As in, if there's a map link at the moment, it goes to, you know, iOS Maps, so it did Apple Maps rather than maybe you want it to go to Google Maps.
Yeah, but if you use the Chrome browser and if you've got Google Maps installed, you can see inside Chrome, actually.
Because Google effectively set up their own version of this before their own applications.
Yeah, well, it's not so much their own version. It's just you can do this kind of URL linking within iOS right now. So there's lots of third-party apps do support it. If you ever look for more information on it, Mac Stories, which is run by Federico Vitici, he really goes deep diving into all these web URLs. So with apps, some of the kind of Python, is it Pythonista, I think, is the app on iPad. Some crazy coding that he eventually does. And it's all things like, you know, with the search, do a Google search, go and grab the image and then paste it back into a document. And he's got a little, you know, macro kind of command. So within his text editor, he can go and do all that. But it's a lot of work. And it is great for him. And it's great for the kind of real hardcore geeks. But nobody's going to do that. There's no real person is going to do that.
No, and Facebook is saying they will do that kind of deep work for you, effectively. I haven't looked into the detail of it anyway. So we'll no doubt hear that and probably get it banned by Apple at some point.
I don't think so much it's going to be banned because, as I said, they're kind of supporting much of it already. I think it's a semi-bold move that, you know, 5 weeks
Facebook are going to try and own it, basically.
Well, five weeks before WWDC.
Right.
And you're kind of launching this kind of thing. It's like, how many people are going to really support this? So...
Yeah, but Apple certainly won't like the fact that Facebook are trying to own it. That's the thing. They will try and retain back control, whether that be they'll do a nice, much... simpler API version of it, which application developers will look into because it's just done. You know?
Yeah, but Apple, if they don't watch out, if they don't innovate too much in iOS, you will see people move over to Android because there's only so long you can kind of be that far behind.
Yeah, if someone leverages it properly, I mean, we've said over the coming last week, you know, few weeks that, well, no, it's months really we're talking. Android has caught up in a lot of areas, and if they continue to move on and these things and I stagnate, then they're in a worrying position for them and their investors. Mobile like button, which is quite surprising they didn't already have, but they have announced and have released a mobile like button now to fill that hole.
I was amazed they didn't have one.
Yeah, you just expect it, don't you? Yeah. I mean, obviously applications have like functionality or whatever, but obviously not done in a particularly app way as far as Facebook concerned. What else we've got? We've got their mobile ad network. They're calling it Facebook Audience Network. And basically, it's just a way of Facebook offering up apps, ads into your application if you want to use it. Effectively, you get paid. They do the hard leverage of finding the advertisers and pumping the adverts into your application. You just effectively give it a placeholder, and away you go.
Yes, and the same way we're going to talk later on about every tech company is a TV producer. I think they're all also ad sellers as well.
Yeah, I think, again, this is the realization of how they're going to, you know, monetize themselves. So that's another ad network in there, and, you know, maybe they'll have some sort of competition within these ad networks to try and, you know, gain advertisers' money. Yeah, and as I said before, it's gone to be a yearly conference now, so we will have these updates once a year.
Yes, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, why not?
Because it was a bit strange that they seemed to do so much out with, you know, little sporadic kind of, you know, conferences, and it was like, why don't you just have one biggie and get it all updated? And especially when they've got this idea of a platform, you know, the big kind of social graph stuff, and then it just seemed to kind of go
well.
Very
now with
quiet.
All the investors and stuff, they've had to be grown up. They've had to sort of, you know, put a schedule down effectively.
Mm.
I've been spammed over the last few weeks with pretty much all my bank account people going, "Do you want to go to PayM?
You had those? I've had nothing."
Yeah, there we go. So do you want to sign up to early stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is PayM is the new protocol, effectively allows you to pay with your mobile phone. It attaches your account to your mobile phone number. And for small transactions, you will be able to pay people via their mobile number, effectively. So in your contacts list, we'll see, you know, pay in nothing.
This is reason number 803 why you host. Because all week I've looked at this and had PAYM in my head and not PM.
Max PAYM.
Pretty much. Every time I saw somebody mention it or hear it, I just had PAYM.
Well, I'm not necessarily right. Anyway, so this is all the major UK banks involved in this. So Barclays, Lloyds, Santander, Halifax and HSBC, and others are going to be coming on board later in the year.
Yep. So basically, I've got your mobile number. I can send you some cash.
Yeah, but that would force me. It's a bit like old PayPal, you know, when you can send anyone cash on their email address, but they have to sign up and create their own account and stuff to be able to receive that money. So I think we'll see it happening. I think people will probably hook onto it. I don't know what the limitations are. I imagine it's small amounts of cash at the moment, right?
I thought it was up to £20 or something.
Yeah,
like
okay.
That.
So it's a bit like your contact payments. And
maybe it's more. I've now got a niggly feeling that it may actually have been more.
Okay.
I mean, I've actually been up to like 200 or something. But it's not everybody. So I think, is it nationwide? Is not partaking?
And it'll support in 2015.
Yes. Which is
and others still finalising all that kind of stuff. I don't think they'll be missing out on anything to early doors. It takes a while for people to pick up on these kind of things and for the, you know, the usefulness. But I think we will start seeing integrated into phones and things like that, into address books. But it will become more and more important to have really secure locks on your phone, you know, and on my Android handset, I don't have any PIN code on it. And I think it's going to start becoming really important to
do things
like that.
Oh, okay. So I've always had it. And I guess maybe that's why why the Touch ID was such a big thing for me, because I have done for the last sort of two, 3 years. And because you're sitting at home, you know, most of the time working, whereas I'm in the office, I'll walk away and just leave my phone sitting there.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's going to become a real issue.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you walk away from your phone and suddenly you've paid £20 to, you know, six of your address book, you know, without your knowledge. US, they're trying to figure out how to get their dirty stealing hands on all our data stored in our servers in our country. basically, there's been a ruling by a US judge, a New York judge, that he wants Microsoft to go and give him access to all the data that is held on a consumer and that data where it's stored in Ireland, basically. And Microsoft has said, hang on a sec, we don't believe you've got the right to go and do that. And we're not going to do that. We're going to keep going through the courts until we get a proper high court ruling on this, or whatever the equivalent in America is.
Yep. So Microsoft, fair play to them. They're saying that we're kind of standing up for the man in this one, and obviously themselves because they know the implications of it, and the wider industry.
Yeah, let's put it this way: they don't care about that guy really.
No,
they care about the millions of other people just like him.
Yeah, and the quote that they've said: "Well, without this challenge, we know the path would need to start with a magistrate judge, and it will eventually have the opportunity to bring the issue to a U.S. District Court judge, and probably to a Federal Court of Appeal, because I think they know, you know, until they get it, hopefully to the right person." That they'll keep losing, and even when they win, they'll just be taken back to an appeal court again.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, the judge's whole point was, unless you give us this access, it's just really hard for us. And you know what? Reverse this round, and let's say, okay, Iraq has access to all your information. Then, you know, suddenly there'd be, you know, massive uproar and incredulous. But basically, yeah, so turn it around and they wouldn't like it. So I think they'll fail ultimately, because I don't know, there's no international law that they can call in to do this.
No, and it feels a bit like the extradition process. American are quite happy taking people into the country, but very, very reluctant to let anybody out. I don't know. I just ultimately see it all fail. We've seen with the stuff.
Or it won't, and then there'll be massive implications for American industry, because as Microsoft well know, they're not going to be able to sell their cloud services to anyone abroad, because people, you know, don't want to give away that access to America.
Absolutely not. And that's the big challenge for a lot of firms now. I mean, people are waking up. Even we've seen it to a certain extent in Google, for whatever reason, the kind of drip of your data is not safe for them. I'm amazed at how many people, as I call them, normals, actually come up with some crazy comments sometimes. Yeah. Like, well, I can't put my stuff for Google. You know, they just search everything now.
Yeah, and that's because companies like Microsoft and whoever, they constantly drip feed out these ad campaigns.
It's that
and
kind of perception, and even Google through the week. I mean, because they admitted that the kind of free accounts they give to students, you know, they were scanning, they've had to reverse that now and say, actually, yeah, that wasn't a very good thing to do. We won't be scanning those anymore.
Mm. Yep. So there we go. So we'll follow that along, no doubt, through all the courts in America, and we'll see where it comes out. It could, you know, something like that can drag on for ages. Internet Explorer has got a security bug, and this actually is affecting all versions of Internet Explorer from IE6 up to IE11. Microsoft said they're aware of a limited number of targeted attacks using this exploit. It's a zero-day exploit. And there was much talk, the fact that so many people are still using XP in old IE6. And obviously that's out of service agreement, as we learned a couple of weeks ago. So they have since come back, because initially they said, no, it's outside of service. We can't, you know, or people were saying, what do we do about XP? And they have come back and said, because we're so close to the end of the period, we are going to patch XP, basically, and IE.
Which is, let's be honest, it's shit. You know what I mean?
I mean, the fact that Microsoft have to, because it's still such a popular platform, because they've never been able to get rid of it.
But it's still a popular platform because, and I'm probably kind of, you know, reversing my corporate stooge mentality, and because you usually bang out, you know, corporations lazy, don't migrate, don't move. And the reason is because Microsoft kept capitulating and putting out patches. The same for people at home. Well, I'm kind of safe as long as I keep it up to date and I keep my antivirus on, I should be fine. And you're massively out of date. And Microsoft, just by turning around and saying, actually, we'll put this one out because it's so close. It's like, well, define close. What happens if there's a worse exploit in a month's time? Is that close enough still? What about 6 months' time if it's an even worse exploit? I mean, this is obviously pretty bad. When Microsoft, they did say, people overreacted. There's very little evidence that anything's actually happened, but we're only kind of like day four of a vulnerability, you know, so
yes, I mean, the internet has a massive tendency to overreact, but also it has a tendency to pick up on things that wouldn't be picked up or would be swept under the carpet if not so.
And also, I mean, as you said at the start, I mean, this wasn't just IE6 and XP. This was every Windows platform and every blooming version of Internet Explorer.
All the way from early till late, yeah.
You know, so the best advice, ditch IE, because it is a piece of... Oh.
Yeah, still 55% of users using IE, something along those lines. Still sticky, isn't it?
Because it had, because I don't know.
Because people think IE is the internet, basically. That's where it comes from.
It's like the old AOL. Remember when people used to say AOL was internet, and it took you know, years and years and years and years for all that to kind of disappear. And it's...
You mean you can get to pages without going through AOL? Yeah.
That can't be right.
That's not possible. Okay. Skype has had its access levels uprated. So a previously premium feature of group video calling has now become free. So you no longer have to be a premium subscriber to get up to 10 people in a Skype call on video call. So I think they had to do it, reacting to Hangouts, right?
Yeah. I mean, Hangouts have been doing it. I mean, since Hangouts have come in for us for the podcast and side of things, it's been great. I mean, we used to use Skype and it was okay, but it was we definitely had more issues than we've had with Hangouts.
Yeah. Hangouts has been a lot more reliable. And still, as I think I said many times before, we use Skype all day, every day for work. And I have been a premium subscriber for that very reason, that we can get video calls between, you know, lots of people. Thing is, I guess, you know, they've had to react, but they will lose money for it, because I don't see why I now need to be a premium subscriber.
No, because I think they turned around and said to kind of thank premium subscribers, we're now giving you international calls free. And it's like, but
I don't do that.
No, most people that were using, you know, Skype probably wouldn't be doing international calls, you know, and
no, wouldn't. Because they're Skyping people.
Exactly. It all felt a bit, well, okay. Yeah. And I think a lot of people that were using Skype have probably moved on to, you know, to using Hangouts, because it was just such a leap forward. It was like, by the way, we're doing 10 people and we're doing it for free.
I think still people like the application side of Skype. I think that, you know, that's another reason for it to be, you know, Hangouts can be a ball ache if someone, you know, someone doesn't. It's easy to tell someone to download Skype and log in.
No, absolutely. And
someone to go to Google and find where Hangouts is, to make sure you've got an account. And
exactly. See that front end of Hangouts? And it's the same in Google Plus, that kind of way they've done Hangouts. It's still not very clean.
It's messy.
Yeah.
And it's because they kind of combined the old chat features with their Hangouts. And it's still not an easy thing. With Skype, at least you can go, you go here, you go to your contacts list, you double click and you're having a call with them. And it's just not that easy on the web.
I was kind of convinced, and they've done it on the mobile site. I know, one thing we should say, the group video calling is not on mobile. So it's right, only on desktop. So Mac, Windows and Xbone.
Right.
Is where you'll get group video calling for free. The thing I'm surprised at that Google haven't done is, remember they bought Sparrow? Remember that iOS, not iOS, the Mac, Google Gmail client, and they bought it. And there was a whole lot of talk that we were going to bring Gmail to the Mac desktop and stuff. And I was convinced they would eventually have a Hangouts app, the same way as we've got apps everywhere. You know, and we'll come on to it a bit and later on in the story. I'm amazed that they've never done like a Hangouts app on desktops, just to make it really easy.
Yeah, because they have helper apps for all sorts of different things. Like Drive's got a helper app, and you know, this, that, and the other. So why not? It makes sense to like just take away, make that easy step.
And I think, you know, that would have really dented Skype. Because I think even corporately, the folk, you know, that are, and I know I'm saying, I don't mean the kind of big corporations, I'm talking about the kind of small startups and stuff.
Yeah.
Skype's dead easy just to download and it works.
Everyone has a Skype account, as I've found. You know, you know, everyone seems to. Comixology. So this is a new story because this was a pick from a couple of weeks ago, right? Was it a pick or was it no, it was another news story, wasn't it? It had been bought by Google.
So no, Amazon had bought Comixology, and that was the story.
Let me get it right.
And I at the time was like, you know, Comixology was a good app. And you said, there's nothing changed. Well, it's damn well changed now.
And my God, the geeks are up in arms. Explain your heartache.
Comixology has always had an app purchase. So the shop front was built into the app.
So basically it meant you could load the app up, you could say, I want that ticket, off I go.
And it was dead easy. And I bought content, even though I've got a couple of shelves full of comics and I've got a whole, you know, the pirated comics. But see, just having that, it's dead easy. And I press a button and I can just buy and buy and buy and buy. Made it a no-brainer. And I think lots of people were the same. So Amazon, and I guess it's in their right, because up until now, Comixology have been quite happy, 30%. Apple, there you go. And just to balance it out, same in Google. So they were quite happy with Google taking their 30% because they did it through the Google Play Store as well, or the Google Play payment system. So they made it dead easy on either platform. So both platforms, they've changed how it works. On Android, it's still like an integrated feeling in that you're not jumping out to a web browser because Google is more open than Apple and does allow you to plug in a different payment system. So they've plugged in, you know, I think it's just an Amazon handling the payment now. PayPal and credit card has been added and they've removed Google Play. So it's still much of the same thing. On iOS, however, because you can't do that, it's a round trip now. So if you want to buy something, you're then taken to a store on a web page and you're buying from the Comixology website.
So it's very much the Audible model, so that you basically go to the website, you order it, and then you can go and access that content on any device.
I don't see it as too big a thing. Of course, the real hardcore Apple guys are like, Amazon, you suck.
Do they have a web viewer of it? Website itself, will it display out the comics, or is it only an iOS thing? Or an app thing.
Do you know, I've never tried to view it on their website. It's a good
because
point.
If it means, you know, if their website's got a nice good a viewer there, then actually you're kind of getting value plus there, and maybe that will become your default access point rather than an app. But I'll let you sort of have a look into that.
I'm just trying to log in just now.
Yeah. So, I mean, if their website doesn't do any kind of viewing at all, then it does seem like a wasted round trip. And that's, you know, that's the drawback of not going down the Apple route and not giving them the 30%.
But see, to be fair, it's no different to Kindle. So Kindle's exactly the same on iOS.
Yeah.
You know, and as you said, with audiobooks as well. And Amazon are quite within their right. It's a bit sucky. But lots of people were really kind of, you know, being hard on Amazon. And there's a couple other plus points. So see
but
when
the,
they
I
were...
mean, 20% is a massive, or 30% is a massive chunk. And I know it takes all the payment out of it, but that's, you know, as a company, that's a big chunk of your
It's a big chunk, but then at the same time, if you want to go in a shop front, you know, if I went into a comic store, they're taking a good chunk. You know, so
the whole point of mobile is that you're not, you know, you're not
No,
supposed
absolutely,
to
be... but there are other stores, you know, if I go and look at Amazon, if I want to put my stuff on Amazon, it's not free.
Not 30%.
If I want to sell my stuff on eBay, it's actually getting quite high.
The industry that I've been working in recently, the figures do get high.
Yeah.
But you know, but it's still for Amazon, who have already got all that payment infrastructure in place for Audible and all those other things they do in a similar way, and Kindle and stuff. They've already got those processes for them. It's not 30%. They own that.
Couple of side effects. One positive and one I think ultimately were quite negative. The positive one is that while Comixology were using the Apple payment method, Apple will actually removing some of the comic content, saying that's too adult. You will not be able to process that in your store through our payment system. We are not happy with that. Whereas I could go into the Android version and get it no problem. So that's obviously now been removed. So you don't have that crazy kind of pseudo censorship that every so often Apple decide, actually, I'm not happy with that. I find that gratuitous, even though you can go and probably find a lot of dodgy content on the App Store if you look hard enough. The downside is probably news that Marvel is now looking at Comixology as a platform because Comixology, their app was called, you know, it was like Comics and it was Comixology, but they also had rebranded versions for Marvel and DC Comics. Marvel are looking at it going, actually, we probably will go either our own way or a different way.
Right.
And whether it's just because it's tied with Amazon, they don't feel comfortable with that, I don't know. So they're seemingly reconsidering their options. Whereas they're happy to deal with Comixology when it's independent, they're not happy when it's owned by Amazon.
And there you go. Consider yourself updated in the comic world.
Lots of geek hate, and some of it justified, but some... I do think over the top.
Again, you surprised me about internet geeks. 1 month after Microsoft's Office apps on iPad, Google has now decided that it is going to release its productivity apps as individual apps rather than under their combined Drive where they live currently. So you can get access to these already inside of an iOS app, but they are going to release them as separate things, you know, I guess in response to Microsoft.
I'm not quite sure. It seemed maybe people didn't figure out that if you downloaded the Google Drive app that you could...
Well, it's not immediately obvious, is it?
No, and so maybe that's the thing that they're looking at. They're looking at, you know, Apple's got obviously their set of apps. Microsoft have now got their set of apps.
They probably saw, you know, as soon as Microsoft did this, they suddenly went to the top of all those charts where people downloading them. And they were thinking, well, how do we can't get in that list because Drive, no one knows what it means. No.
The other thing that was amazing as well about that one, which again, linked back to payments, Microsoft said, actually, you can buy this through Apple Payments System. Yeah. And they were top grossing as well. You know, yeah. So that shows you how big an impact it has. It wasn't just people downloading a freebie app because it was free. It was top grossing. It was beating some of the crazy, you know, Clash of Clans and all that kind of stuff. So, the one thing this has added is you can now edit offline.
Yes, so they've added proper offline features.
Which
so
is nice. Really
makes
nice.
Makes it much more practical, yeah. Foursquare has also announced that they're going to try and split into two. So Foursquare, the check-in, I mean, this is the reason that they're we all know them as the check-in company, right? That has clearly sort of not died away. It's just Facebook got that nailed as well now, really. So Foursquare are trying to remain relevant, and they've sort of decided to split down the middle. So they will have their kind of check-ins and their reviewing sort of side of things. But they also have a kind of area... I think what they call it, a swarm. So basically it's you chatting to your friends who are in or near your location. So kind of just a different way of sparking up IM conversations, basically trying to leverage their location-based sort of services.
One of my friends had a blog post the other day that said, Foursquare, I don't even know why I've got it on my iPhone. I should just ditch it. And he has. And it was just, why check in? And I went through little phases, you know. I tried to do it for a month and see, will I get any benefit of it? And I don't. I just don't.
No, I mean, people played the mayor game for a bit.
Jack still does.
Yeah. Play the mayor game for a bit.
As he's driving by the gym, he will check in. As he's driving by it on the way home, he will check in.
Yeah. I've been there, done it. I think... I'm guessing, though, that really it's a good idea, or it's at least something they're trying to do to try and remain relevant. Now, whether they're going to remain relevant, I kind of doubt, because, you know, they've lost that leverage. They had leverage for a bit and now they've kind of lost it. And that's what happens in time.
They were a hot startup, and then they get eaten, as you said, by Facebook. And now when it comes to like discovery, you know, the whole, where will I go and eat? Yelp is eating that. So Yelp for me is definitely kind of win that game right now. If I want to go and eat around Glasgow, I kind of have a look and see what my friends have been recommending and rating and think, yeah, let's go there for lunch. That's working for me.
Now Foursquare is saying, well, we've got the technology now to sort of not only say where you've been, we can tell how long you've been there and all those things, but that relies on you wanting to share that information, basically.
You're going to say that line and you're going out.
And want to be a part of that. And why would you want to let Foursquare know exactly where you are and how long you've been there and, you know, absolutely, all those kind of things. So what's the benefit to a consumer? You can see why there's benefits to businesses, but what's the benefit to the consumer? There doesn't seem to be any, really.
And also what they're saying is that Yelp will just give you, you know, where's the kind of 10 best places, you know, if you're looking for an Italian, what's the 10 best Italians or what's the 10 nearest Italians? What they're going to try and do is say, actually, what are the 10 best Italians, but included in those ones, higher rank, the ones that you've been to before and you've maybe rated, and also what your friends have been to before and rated as well, to try and give it more tailored. And it's like, that all sounds a bit... Just sounds like, yeah.
There's room for mashups around this, but I just don't see it as a dedicated app anymore.
It just sounds but it's tailing off and we need to do something.
What they have said. And fair on them for doing that, in at least identifying that and not just sort of going to their graves. Microsoft have been laying down what they kind of meant when they launched the Xbox One about their kind of media side of things, so not their gaming side. We've seen that sort of happened and is sort of ticking along. But the media side, they've decided they're going to start coming up with Xbox originals in a kind of similar way to, I guess, Netflix are doing their Netflix originals. Microsoft are now trying to get in. Problem is, Netflix came up with some quite good sounding originals and some critically acclaimed ones. And Xbox doesn't seem, from the descriptions that I've got here, and that's all I've got to go on, I can't say I'm overly excited.
So you're not looking forward to Bonnaroo, the legendary music festival being broadcast live on June 12th to 15th?
Music festivals for me have never ever come across very well on TV, right? I don't think. And these guys, basically, their selling point for this, I mean, this legendary music festival. Now, do you know about Bonnaroo?
No.
I've never heard of it in my life. And that probably says more about me than it does about Bonnaroo. But nevertheless, I've never heard of it. But they will let you, you know, watch it live, and then you can choose the stage you're watching, and you can choose the angle that you're watching it at.
But so, there you go. I've just went to, so it's, I mean, it's obviously American. Right. Lineup, 2014 lineup. What do you think the first act is?
I don't know.
Elton John.
Okay, well, you know,
but then it goes.
I've heard of him.
But then it goes Kanye West, Jack White, Lionel Richie, Vampire Weekend, the Avett Brothers, Phoenix, Skrillex, Arctic Monkeys, Frank Ocean, the Flaming Lips.
It sounds like it's a big deal then. I mean, they've got big artists, so it is a big deal. It's bigger than I'm giving it, you know.
So it's obviously a big.
Legendary within America.
Yep. So, Every Street United.
Right, so this is a football-based thing. Anything with football in the title and based around football will always go down as a dud in my line.
Signal to Noise, a six-part documentary series about the rise of modern technology.
Yeah.
With one of them being about Atari Game Over and how.
If that was in a program guide, I wouldn't watch it.
Humans, an adaptation of a Swedish show.
Now this one looked a little bit more interesting. So it's going down that whole, you know, Nordic type thing.
And it's co-produced by Channel 4, the UK's Channel 4.
So at least it's got positive spin there. And this is kind of looking at the impact of AI, right, on everyday life. So that at least has triggered a little bit of interest there.
And Halo, which is announced last
year.
Oh,
what a surprise. Now, has a game ever been turned into a good movie? I don't think so.
Yeah, but this is a TV series.
Yeah, so this is okay, and they've got, you know, some big names on board as to produce it and make it, but the problem is games are always real, you know, so cliched and nasty things, and I don't think they could ever turn it into a truly gritty thing. Although they've got the guy from the director of Battlestar Galactica on board, so maybe they can turn it into the grimy, real thing, but I doubt it.
No, and it's just the fact that they announced it last year, they're kind of re-announcing it this year, it all feels a bit...
Yeah, and the ones they announced last year are still in what they're calling active development, which probably means this, they have to keep it alive for some political reason, but effectively it's not been, and nothing's happened to it.
So, and we should point out, it's not just Microsoft that's doing this, Yahoo are doing this as well, aren't they?
Everyone's coming out and thinking they have to come up with original content. And I think it's, as we were talking about before the podcast even started, we were talking about how the future is just this kind of subscription-based service. Sky have kind of made hints that they will, you know, in a couple of years' time, there won't be a satellite dish involved in their coverage. It will literally just be a cable going into the back of your thing. So effectively, we'll be living on the Netflix side of things, which is, you know, search for the content you want to watch and you can watch it whenever you want. And Yahoo are coming on board with this as well, so they've got original TV series as well.
And again, much like how you said, the titles say it all. It's two comedies, one titled Other Space, the other called Sin City Saints.
Comedies. but having said, I mean, I, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll get it right, and actually. Maybe these companies are the guys to come up with the money for original series, but I just want everyone to give money to HBO to let them make lots more shows.
yeah, because this the kind of shows that we've talked about here are going to end up in Channel 447 and Sky.
Yeah. Yes, that unknown channel. Blurry. Still, I was on it, you weren't. yes, so we've said that Microsoft are producing these sort of original series, and part of one of their documentaries was to go and find this legendary Atari ET game that got produced back in, was it the 80s?
Yeah.
And it apparently was just like the worst game ever produced, and Atari decided rather than releasing this onto the world, they would go and bury and concrete over this a big stack of them, and it's been legendary for years. Although I can't say I'd heard of the legend until Microsoft started sort of picking around with it.
No, I'd heard of this back in the day. So see, back in the day when I would get my computer mags, and Ed just talked about it a number of times as well. So it was one of these kind of things that everybody, there was some
half urban myth around it as well.
Yeah, some people thought it was one of these kind of urban myths, like, you know, it was so bad they had to bury it. Yeah, right. But Microsoft found it.
But they actually went and found it, and they dug it all up, and that's going to be one of their original series documentaries.
Yeah,
about the death of Atari.
I actually think they were just hiding some Xbox Ones in there as well. Yeah, you know, they're on the shelves in the desert.
So don't look there. Don't look there. Minecraft. Basically, Denmark has been mapped into Minecraft. This is a real loose story because it's not really. It's just an awfully big thing. And basically, they're allowing their citizens to go out into their towns and go and build and construct towns inside Minecraft.
Yeah, but this was the Danish government.
Yeah, so it's actually from a government. And saying that people could go on field trips into kind of lesser explored areas of their country. And you think, this is have they seen Minecraft?
I just thought it was a great story, and
it is a good story.
And what they're saying is to their citizens, go in, download it, and start to make your own cities, villages.
Go and make your own areas, yeah.
But don't use the dynamite, because I've removed it from the game.
The problem is with Minecraft that to do anything that actually looks good has to be at such high resolution, as in such massive. They would need such a massive server to run it that they're low resolution, and therefore they're just going to look lots of blocks, basically.
No, I agreed. But then it's just the sheer.
It's an interesting to see a government go with Minecraft, though. I mean, the bloke who made Minecraft, it's unbelievable how far it's come. You know,
they've sold 50 million copies now across all the different platforms.
Yeah, and it costs about £5 a pop each time you sell it. So that's an awful lot of money for a game that deliberately retro in a very clever way. So,
the guys at work whose kids are between, you know, like 6 and 7 and maybe like 13, 14, they are hooked like fools on it. It's just...
It still holds a real bit of my attention, as far as I keep feeling like I need to go back and play Minecraft again. Although, you know, and occasionally I will still watch a YouTube video of, you know, what someone's been doing in Minecraft and stuff like that. So I still find it interesting, and all the developments they're still moving in on the platform. I will go back to it at some point.
One of the guys explained how his kid plays it as well. He's sitting there with his Xbox 360 playing it, and with a laptop at the side watching the videos of other people playing it and doing stuff. It's just
I want to go and create a Switch. I want to go and create
all that kind of stuff.
And nowadays you can fly around and all sorts of stuff, can't you?
Although bizarrely, he did ask his dad to go and ask the guy at work who knows this kind of stuff, i.e. me, how I can hack my Xbox so that I can get these particular... And I'm like, I don't know.
Just go on the PC, because you can, you know, and that's what I said to him.
I says, he's got his laptop, get in there, oh, we don't let him. And it's like, look,
right.
You're kind of... If you want them to be creative, get on the PC and let them do what he likes.
Yeah, because create mode is, you know, deliberately that way inclined. It's not meant to be, I have to mine it, yeah. Anyway, that's the end of our podcast for this week. I don't think we've got any pick. I haven't got a pick. Have you got a pick?
No.
Well, I haven't got a pick either. So if you want to find out more about us and about what we do, you can do that at www.digitaloutbox.com, and you can email us info@digitaloutbox.com. We're also on Twitter and Skype, Digital Outbox. My blog is academyracer.co.uk if you want to find out what my racing antics. And I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK. Ian, where can we find you?
My blog is iand.net. I'm on Twitter as Sweeper. And I'd just like to congratulate you on your TV debut? I don't know if it's your TV debut.
I think I've had sidelines occasionally on TV, but this is
No, you're right. I saw you at one of the Grand Prix. You're standing in the background behind
grinning
behind like Brundle or something like that, going hee.
Now I am the person in front of the camera. So yes, I had an immediate interview. How exciting.
Whereas this time, I'll get them next time.
Have we not had a podcast since I raced? I can't even remember when I raced. Anyway, there we go.
Yeah, top of the leaderboard. It's all got in his head.
It's all about Chris Hutchinson, as the commentator said.
Goodbye.
See you later.
It's all about Chris Hutchinson.
That's what he said. He said in the lead of the championship, it's all about Chris Hutchinson.
I tell you, I'm going to change the website.
I follow him on Twitter now.
It's all about Chris Hutchinson.
I follow David Addison on Twitter now.
Who?
Just to make sure that he's talking about me.
All right. Is that the commentator?
Yeah. There we go. It's still on Sky. You can still go and get it on Sky. Just search Caterham UK. Fabulous.